Welcome to IanEllis.podbean.com. I'm your host, Ian Ellis. Smoke some, drink some, and relax. This is a show to chill out to. You're going to have to meditate. We're going to go in a lot of different directions at once. Last week, I had what I would call a senior moment, or that's how it probably appeared to you listening to the show, where I was talking about something and I couldn't remember what I had just talked about. And the reason is I got my kid down for a nap and I was like, well, let me go record the podcast now. And then when my wife gets home later, I could go smoke something, drink something, and listen to my own show. I make this because I enjoy listening to it. I recorded it and the audio was trash. I think I had an earbud still plugged in. And so it was recording from the earbud. It sounded like whispery. I tried just turning the volume up. I was like, maybe that'll save. Nope. It was just louder garbage. So I re-recorded it. My kid was still passed out at the time. And trying to remember all the things I want to talk about and remember what I have or haven't talked about when I've literally just talked about all of that was just too much for me to keep together in my head. I couldn't remember what I had said or not said. I also listened back to my episode last week, and as I'm listening to it, I'm like, I feel like I've just regurgitated an entire episode of Red Bar. So if you guys don't know, go listen to Red Bar Radio because he's a master class in funny. He just got into it with Joey Coco Diaz, and his response to Joey Diaz is exactly how you want to handle things. He's happy, he's goofy, he's making strong points, he's being funny. It was perfect. That is how you deal with the situation. So go on YouTube, Red Bar Radio. You can see the Joey Coco Diaz saga, and I highly encourage anybody who's in any kind of like comedy, or if you're getting in beefs online, go watch that. You go learn how to deal with this shit. And he explains everything he's doing as he's doing it. There's no secrets. We want everybody to be better. I'll tell you everything I'm doing because I want you to be better. Because the better you are, the more competition there is for me to push myself to be better. Last week, fucking audio got all fucked up. I was regurgitating Mike's point about how comedians always say the same thing. Mike says it like they have a list of topics and they all kind of cover the same topics. And a couple years ago when I called in to Jim and Sam, one of the points I had made to Jim is I was talking to him about like how comedians are very similar to the Comicsgate thing, where the Comicsgate, it's like comics used to be a way to escape from the world that maybe occasionally had some political commentary, but now people are turning on the comic industry because it's become too political. You're not hiring talent, you're hiring transgender or minority, and you're putting the minority before the talent. It's not that you shouldn't have these different voices within the conversation, it's that you want the most talented people that have those. You want the talent first. And if they happen to be anything else, like that's the most fair thing you can do, is just say talent first. So when I called into Jim and Sam, I was like, these comedians are doing the same thing where it's like, it's all political. You can't escape the political shit. And it's not the politics of, I watch the world and I have an opinion on it. It's the politics of, like, my existence is a statement. I am transgender funny. And this move of the Hannah Gadsby's toward, like, the new funny is honesty. It's like, the new funny is not being funny. There was actually news articles written about how, like, now comedy doesn't have to be funny anymore. It's like, no, that's unacceptable. That's not the fucking job. The job is to be funny, goddammit. But yeah, that was what I meant by that. And I just want to give a shout out to Red Bar, because I felt like, as I said all this stuff, I feel like I'm giving my own opinion, and then I listened back to it, and I was like, I really feel like I just regurgitated an entire episode of Red Bar. I want to talk about Luis J. Gomez tonight, and I want to talk about Kill Tony and Chris D'Elia. Let's start with Chris D'Elia. He just did a new special. I've been getting a lot of positive feedback about my album reviews, and people have asked me what I think of Chris D'Elia's thing. Here's the thing. I don't like Chris D'Elia. Can't take him. I find him to be insufferable, and I would consider it to be a punishment to have to watch his special. I tried, I made it about 10 minutes, and I was like, I can't do it. I'm not watching you, I'm not watching Tom Segura, I'm not watching Bert Kreischer, I'm not watching any of it. Fuck you. But I will talk to you about Chris D'Elia. When I was in LA, I saw Chris D'Elia a lot. You know, he just lives at the Comedy Store. Him and Tony and fucking all the guys. I know all the guys. I've met all the guys. I've watched all the guys work out all of their shit in front of open mic rooms, in front of packed audiences, on the fly. I got to see the whole process and see what these guys are like behind the scenes. And Chris is a rich LA douchebag guy and a pussy hound. And his interest was in just chasing bitches around and being the cool guy. Now, when he's on stage, similar to how I said, like, Patrice would ask a question. It was a leading question to get into a topic that he wanted to get into. And then he would debate the audience member or whatever they said to get to the punchline that he wanted to get to. Or to some new place that came out of the wild card of the audience member saying whatever the fuck they said. Chris D'Elia does light crowd work. So he's amazing live. If you want to go see a comedian live and have a great time, he's going to bring the house down. And that's something you can't take away from him, because there's a lot of guys that are killers that they don't bring the house down. They don't get the big belly laughs. Now, Chris's way of doing it is he kind of engages in a little bit of light crowd work, sort of pointing at people and making a thing about them, and then he just twists that into his pre-prepared bit, and it looks very natural. But then you see him a couple times and you realize he's always doing the same thing. It's just it's just a different member of the audience that he's pointing out. He's looking for the fat white guy or the dumpy girl or the slutty girl or the weird friend, and it comes across as being very organic and amazing. And in the moment you're like, oh my god, this dude's actually like really good on his feet. But then you find out it's really just it's planned crowd work. Now, the content of his material is dog shit. It's there's no intellectual risk, there's no emotional risk, there's no revelation, there's no unique opinion on the world. It's just a goofy, shitty voice. And I compare it to it's squawks. He's squawking. He's squawking in a foreign accent. One of my best memories in comedy is in college, long before I had any aspirations of stand-up comedy. I was friends with this girl, Megan, and she had a little sister named Molly. Molly was into comedy. She's the first person I ever met that was like into comedy. Like, nobody's into comedy. And she came over and she did Brian Regan's entire routine with the enthusiasm of an 11-year-old girl. And it was the funniest fucking thing I'd ever seen in my life. It's one of my favorite memories of seeing stand-up, is seeing an 11-year-old girl do all of Brian Regan's jokes with all of her 11-year-old enthusiasm and goofiness. It was fucking amazing. It ruined Brian Regan for me, because I like the 11-year-old girl more than I like fucking Brian Regan. Brian is great. Don't get it twisted. Like, you might be like, he only likes hardcore. I appreciate all the moves. I give everybody a fair shot based on their funny. So Chris D'Elia is a guy who is at the peak of his career right now, because he's about to age out of the industry. He appeals to like 11-year-old girls and like college freshmen, not all college freshmen, but the douchey, bong and beer frat crowd. They're way into Chris D'Elia because he's a swaggy, braggadocious dude. And right now he's cool. Oh god, we have they're coming by with the lawnmower. You guys remember Mark Maron screaming at his neighbor to stop doing construction in the middle of his podcast? We'll consider that ambient noise. Chris D'Elia, there's no content to what he does, and he's not showing any growth. In fact, he's actually going backwards, because he's gone from kind of occasionally doing his voices to like doing the voices a lot, like leaning on it. And Jim Gaffigan is the same way, where like the inner monologue thing, that was just part of one bit, but now it's become like his entire existence. It's a gimmick, and gimmicks get old. And Chris D'Elia right now, he's kind of cool, kind of relevant, kind of in touch with the culture in like the douchiest fucking way possible. Fucking fashion and Eminem. I fucking hate Eminem. But he's in touch with something that's going on right now. He's having a moment. But his audience is going to age out. They're going to get older and not be into babies, dolphins. I watched Red Bar's coverage of Chris D'Elia in the first 10 minutes of his special. I'm basing my opinion on those two things. He's not growing as an artist. And his audience is going to get old and get tired of him. Oh, here, the lawnmower is directly in my back pocket. I'm making the worst podcast ever. So similar like Dane Cook. Dane Cook was a wacky wild guy. And I was saying like he was all about nostalgia comedy. Remember a thing? It was like this, that, and the other. Bring it to the future. Wouldn't it be wacky? And that served him very well when he had youthful energy to run around like a fucking demon when he was on the stage. But as he got older, he actually put in the work to try and grow as an artist. Dane Cook, whatever you might think of him, he stripped it all down. And he went from wacky voices to like, let's do an intimate show in a nightclub and talk about how my parents died of cancer and my brother robbed me. And he still suffers from, like, he can't get out of his own way. He still has like a douchey ego from all of his accomplishments. But he at least, you know, he's a Boston comic who came up with Patrice. I'm going to have to try and walk away to another room. There's no way we're going to make it through this. My kid is napping right now. He's going to wake up. I'm going to go stand in the kitchen. It's going to be like, I have a terrible echo. Anyway, Chris D'Elia is not going to grow the way Dane Cook grew. So Dane Cook got like an extra 10 years out of it. I was talking to a guy at work and I was saying like, you know, pretty soon Chris D'Elia is not going to be cute. I mean, you look at him, his face is melting. And kids aren't going to be into this goofy, shitty voice forever. It's a gimmick. And I was like, I mean, what happens when he hits 40? And the dude I was talking to was like, isn't he already 40? And I was like, ooh, hoo, hoo, hoo. Yeah, Chris is on the decline. He ain't going to make it to 50. You ain't going to be 50 going, like, his only hope is if they do a reboot of Taxi and get him to be the fucking man on the moon character. So that's Chris D'Elia. I think he's peaked. We're at peak Chris D'Elia right now. And he might have one or two more specials in him, but it's going to be all on the decline from here. He doesn't even have the, for being a Hollywood sellout, he doesn't have what Kevin Hart has in him to be a good comedic actor. He's not a particularly good actor. He wants to get in action movies, but he's not particularly handsome or emotive or good at acting. So his chances of being anything other than like a bit part character are slim to none. So this is the end of Chris D'Elia. Luis J. Gomez. Let's talk about this motherfucker. He had on Revenge of the Sis. And that's how he kind of came on my radar as someone that I was like, all right, well, if you're going to be the realest ass dude and you're going to fucking sit around and hang out with these guys for a little bit of internet clout, now you're on my list. Now I'm paying attention to you. And it turned out he's way more bitch made than I thought. And I'm actually offended at his existence because everything he claims to be, I'm like the real life version of that. So when I see him, I completely see through him. He's not particularly talented as a comedian. He's not particularly talented as a podcaster. He's not particularly dynamic, but what he is a network. This is a broader conversation we need to get into about like networks and communities and platforms. I saw a YouTube video, I think it was called Sweethearts or something about that, where this guy was breaking down those three things about the comic book industry. Comic book industry, you can draw a lot of parallels. They're in a downfall right now to the coming downfall for all of stand-up comedy. Other than COVID has pretty much ended stand-up comedy. Within the comics industry, some of the big complaints was that like they were hiring all these minority opinions that are, they're not bucking the system. They're part of the system. They're part of the narrative. They're not giving you any new insight. They're regurgitating things that plays into the powers that be. And it's like, well, if you're just part of the system, then what the fuck am I listening to? There's no difference between watching Samantha Bee and watching MSNBC. It's just one's a slightly cuntier version of the same talking points. There's no new content there to be heard. That's speculation. I've never watched Samantha Bee. KB says she's good. Whatever her opinion is worth. See, here's where I'm going in like 10 different directions at once. CEO said, like, his big complaint about Luis J. Gomez is he feels like he could be Luis J. Gomez. Like, there's not a lot to being him because he's not particularly good at stand-up. He's been doing this for 14 years. I've been doing this for 10 years. He should be far superior than me. But he is at the level of like a 5 or 6 year comedian where it's not quite polished. He doesn't quite have his own point of view. He hasn't figured out what's funny about him. He hasn't figured out how to do what he's doing. And I think a lot of that is that he's doing too much. He's trying to put together this legacy career, and he's putting so much work into the career side of it that he's not taking care of the funny side of it. It's hard to put in the work to become a good comedian when you're focused on networking constantly. And one of the big red flags that he's a fucking lying piece of shit is that he loves talking about how Tony Hinchcliffe is the West Coast version of Luis J. Gomez, which I promise you, Tony might be nice to you to your face, but behind closed doors, he thinks you ain't shit. He considers that to be an insult. I know Tony quite well. We're going to get into Tony. Let's go back to Luis. Let's go back to me. When I first started in comedy, after maybe a year or two that I was in it, I discovered podcasts. I flipped on iTunes one day and I saw there was a Marc Maron podcast. It was like the head banner. Marc Maron interviews Robin Williams. I was like, I love Robin Williams. He's an insightful guy. I'd love to hear a conversation. And I listened to it and I was like, holy shit. What is this? What is a podcast? And it turned out you don't have to pay to do it. You just have to have the equipment. And the equipment isn't expensive. You could just go buy a shitty mic and a shitty laptop and download some free software. And you're off to the races. If you can upload a file, you can have a podcast. And podcasts decentralized the power structure of broadcasting. Which XM wanted to do, but their greed kind of got in the way of being able to do what they wanted to do. But with a podcast, because anybody could do it and it was free, you got rid of all these gatekeepers of saying, like, rather than begging Sirius XM or the radio to give you a shot, you could just create your own thing and build your own fan base. Red Bar is about 20 years ahead of everybody. And everything everybody's doing now, he was doing 10 years ago. At some point, I'm going to sit down and have to do like a 4 or 5 hour explanation of everything that he's done. I don't think he wants that. I think he likes the mystery of all of this, but it's fascinating. It's an unbelievable tale. Let's go back to the podcast. So I started a show called Chicago Open Mic where I was just aping Marc Maron's style and interviewing people, except I didn't have access to big-time comedians, so I was interviewing open micers, but I was a brand new open micer, and so that was great. It was a chance for me to learn. I get to ask these guys all kinds of questions and figure out technique and structure and confidence and anything you can tell me to make me a funnier, better person. I wanted to hear it. Now, I got to be very popular from doing this, and I thought people liked me. Turns out they didn't like me. They liked my platform. The podcast in Chicago at the time was Red Bar, which had been around for like 7 or 8 years at that point, and then me. I was the first, like, comic to be like, hey, I'm gonna do a podcast. And so people were really nice to me and booking me on shit because they wanted to be on my podcast, because that legitimized them and it kind of made them feel like they were doing something and they could show people, hey, look, I did a podcast, I was asked to be a guest on a thing. And it was good for me because I would have a person on and then they would go give it to all their friends, and that would be, you know, 50-60 extra downloads. And the next person will come on and you just sort of whittle away and maybe get one subscriber here and there. But if you're having on a new guest every week and you're picking up one or two subscribers every week, then you're you're off to the races pretty quick. Within a year or two, you have a decent fan base. And I was doing all right, but a few months after I started my show, well, then everybody else started their own shows. And the same thing they're doing with me, and now they're doing with each other, and it became a network. And it's this circle jerk thing of like, I'll come on your show and bring all of my audience members, and then you come on my show and you'll bring all of your audience members. And so now there's a class, there's a network of like, we all circle jerk each other, and that's good. And then there's the people below them that want to get into the circle jerk. And that we went from decentralizing the power to like, now the idiots are just doing exactly what the idiots are becoming gatekeepers, and they're becoming gatekeepers to the circle jerk of minor league podcast comedy, whatever the fuck you want to call it. LA is just catching up to all of this. Over like the last, I don't know, 6 years, like it started with Rogan, and nobody in LA is going to do anything until it's financially lucrative. So once Joe Rogan got to the point that he was making millions of dollars, then everybody was like, ooh, maybe this money grubbing. So everybody started doing their things, and then you saw shows getting picked up for TV through Comedy Bang Bang. You saw the success of the Nerdist Network, and so now comics in LA are doing the circle jerk thing of like, everybody's on everybody's show, and they're also trying to start all these different pilots. So rather than having one show and doing it well, they have three shows that they do poorly, which is fucking maddening. Like, I want to kill Tom Segura and Bert Kreischer because they're ruining comedy and podcasts by, they're taking their celebrity, they're sort of the voice of comedy, they're the voice of funny, for better or worse, they're the ones that have a massive audience, and they're going, hey, massive audience, this is the standard, this is what comedy looks like. And it's the most boring, god-awful dog shit. None of them are ever funny. It's gone from, you know, everybody doing the Marc Maron style of like, let's sit down and have a deep conversation about therapy and my flaws as a human being and how I've grown and road stories. To now, it's an informal hang of just regurgitating the same stories and prompting people to say the same stories that you've heard them say on other shows. These guys are doing so many shows, I can't imagine they have time to listen to other people's shows. Which is horrendous. all of this has to do with Lewis. So Lewis was basically the Ian Ellis of New York, where he started a show early on, and he built his show, just like Kill Tony, through celebrity appearances. So while Lewis isn't particularly funny or talented, being part of the New York comedy scene, he has access to Dave Attell and Big J. Okerson and, you know, whoever the fuck else, Jeff Ross, Colin Quinn. I'm sure all of these people have been on Legion of Skanks. So he gets all of them on his show, and then he gets the celebrity bump of that going up, just like Kill Tony did. Nobody gives a fuck about Tony, but people love that Joe Rogan goes on there. They love that Russell Peters goes on there. They like these big celebrities that he's bringing in. And then Lewis took the next step, and he grew that out into being a network. And he's, you know, he understands the power of using a podcast and using YouTube channels to develop a massive audience so that you don't need the industry. But he's doing it to break into the industry. So he took all these old comics that don't understand what a podcast is. They don't go on the internet. They don't understand the internet. They don't spend any time on YouTube. And he talked them into being part of his network. And that I assume he doesn't give a fuck about them. He doesn't listen to their shows, but he's doing the circle jerk thing of like, if you're on my network, then you're promoting me at all times. He doesn't want them to be better. He wants them to be promoting him. Now let's go back to the other coast. Let's go back to Kill Tony. A lot of this is going to be about how I'm low-key, like, interwoven into the fabric of comedy. Patrice used to talk about how there's cartels. He was talking about Tracy Morgan got in trouble, and the Tina Fey gay community cartel came and was like, knock, knock, knock. Hey, man, it's time for you to pay us what you owe. We gave you this career. We gave you these opportunities. Now you got to bend over and comply. Now you got to be an advocate for us. Now you got to be the advocate for gay stuff. Which I've heard a lot of firsthand stories about how Tracy Morgan is on the DL. I don't know if he still is after his accident. Maybe that Walmart bus knocked the gay out of him. But I'd always wonder, like, when he got in trouble for his gay stuff, why didn't he just come out and be gay? I mean, he's famous enough that he could own gayness. He could have been the Frank Ocean of comedy. But whatever. I love Tracy. He's a fucking character. He's enjoyable to watch. Where was I? I gotta go back. Cartels. When I got to LA, I was looking at it as there's a Joe Rogan cartel. Because you see, Joe Rogan had his guys, Tony Hinchcliffe, Ari Shaffir, Burt Kreischer, Tom Segura, and he promoted them a lot, and he took them on the road a lot, and that gave all of them careers. Duncan Trussell. Joe Rogan basically gifted them careers, to borrow a phrase from Porcelain. Or Beige Frequency. I get them confused. he gifted them a career. And they ran with it and started their own networks. Now, a cartel generally is invested in the building the corporation, in building the brand. Everybody's aware of the fact that they're part of a thing. It turns out they don't think like a cartel. I looked at Kill Tony and I was like, that's got to be the easiest entry point into the cartel, because they have an open mic sign up. So I was like, all right, go on there, spaz out. They'll start booking me on things, and then through them, I'll meet these other guys. And it worked well enough. Tony, you know, took me and introduced me to Joe Rogan a couple times, and at one point he was having meetings. He was trying to get Kill Tony made into a TV show for Adult Swim or Comedy Central, and he was bringing my name up to the meetings, allegedly, according to him. He may have just been dangling a carrot in front of me so I would keep making cool shit for him. Let's take an aside to Kill Tony real quick. They just made a Kill Tony documentary. It's terrible. It's a commercial for Tony Hinchcliffe. Tony is deep into Quentin Tarantino, so I'm surprised he didn't try to put more Tarantino swag into what he did. This whole thing connects. All right, so I don't know if I got to go backward or forward. This ties into the documentary. In the documentary, he said the reason the show didn't sell was that he couldn't describe Kill Tony in a sentence. You absolutely can. It's an open mic with celebrity guest judges. It's Last Comic Standing, but mean and underground. With apologies, is Opie and Anthony meets the Ding Dong Show. Ding Dong Show is a show that Don Barris does where he collects schizophrenic, mentally ill people that want to be famous in LA, and he brings them onto a show and treats them serious according to whatever they say they are. Whatever they say they are, he will indulge them. Similar to what we do with, Joe Booney, or hopefully soon Arana Nation, where I just let them be them because they're naturally characters and I get to enjoy their characterness. In the last episode, I kind of wanted to scream at everybody to shut the fuck up when Joe Booney was on, because everything that comes out of Joe Booney's mouth just makes me die laughing. And not in a way of like making fun of him. It's just, he's such a weird, absurd character, and he exists in real life. A 20-year-old autistic Muslim sports fan in Canada who speaks in, you know, platitudes and aphorisms and takes himself quite seriously. It's the funniest thing in the world to me. I love everything. Everything that comes out of his mouth is like a classic line to me. So that's what Don Barris does with the Ding Dong Show. I have like a YouTube version of the Ding Dong Show, but there's the added element of, you know, we have this corporation, and the top of the corporation is an Opie and Anthony style show that sort of directs and influences and trolls the shows that are under us. And then we also, because we do function like a cartel, we train people that come in to be able to take a punch and to be able to throw a punch and to have some standard and understanding of funny so that they can go out and create their own thing. And then we promote the fuck out of their thing. And it's a network that grows through trial and combat rather than, opportunity and dick sucking. Cosmic Cam. Brother Cosmic Cam has a new show. It's doing quite well. Shout out to Cosmic Cam. The other week, Helen and Rex teamed up and smashed Kyle the Super Saiyan from Saiyans Entertainment, and that was they make a great pair. Those two together, that's a great show. Or those two at least trolling together is a great show. Cosmic and Jay King, that's a great combination to throw out there. I think it's helpful to have another person with you, because like CEO helps me keep my ego in check and helps me not get too wrapped up in my own stupid horseshit. He'll always pull me back down. So it is useful to have a partner. As Patrice said at the roast, where he's like, Seth MacFarlane, he needs a Trey Parker to his Matt Stone or whatever. You need someone there to deflate your bubble every once in a while, so you can stay grounded and stay focused. Ross has Jay. So I get to LA and I see Kill Tony as a cartel. And they're not organized at all. So now I'm having conversations with Tony and I'm trying to explain to him like what a cartel is and how their show should be functioning, because they have the Kill Tony show, but then they also had the Ice House Chronicles, which was like a feature show. A feature means like instead of getting 5 minutes, you get 15 minutes. So I'm saying to Tony and Red Band, I'm like, listen, you should have this open mic show, and each week you should pick one comic from that open mic and you should have them come showcase at the Ice House. And that's a great incentive for open micers to go on your show other than the exposure of being on your show. Apparently Kill Tony's way bigger than I thought. They had 90 some thousand subscribers on YouTube. He says he's the number one show, and I was like, how can that be possible? Because Joe Rogan is like 33 million, and then Bill Burr is like 20 million, and then the next highest podcast is only in the hundreds of thousands, and it drops off more and more significantly as you go down. But you know what, Tony? Cult of Black Phillip is 66,000 subs, so maybe I'm the number two podcast in the world, even though we don't post shit on there ever. Maybe we'll have to start taking advantage of that, Tony. Maybe I gotta roll up on you. Red Bar has been doing clips of his show for, I don't know, 3 or 4 months now, and he's been explosive. He's gone from scratch. He started at zero, started a new channel, to 15,000 subscribers. And now, that might not sound like enough, but it's enough that he has to be reckoned with. And so now when he goes after these people have to respond. And boy, oh boy, is that ever my dream in life to get our numbers. And we will get there. Right now we're learning and we're figuring stuff out. Now is a great... I don't need all the world's attention right now, because right now we're still figuring out what it is we do. But long term, that is the goal, to force reality to reckon with us. At least that's mine. Everybody has their own goals in there. Some people want to be rich. Some people just want to goof around and have fun. I want to reckon with the world. So, Tony. Let's keep going back to Tony. I'm telling him that he needs to do all of this stuff. And I think I went off about it on one of my podcasts. And Brian Redband had checked out my podcast. He got mad at me for posting my minute-long clips from Kill Tony. He didn't see it as a commercial for the show. Hey, here's my bit. Go listen to the whole show. He saw it as I was stealing his intellectual property by recording the parts of the show that I was on. Which, also, me recording on my shitty little phone was better audio quality than what Brian Redband was doing. Anyway, he threatened me. Told me I'd be banned from the show if I did all that. And in that episode, I go off about how like they should be taking people from that show to the next show. They should be developing these levels. They should be operating as a cartel, as a gang that is basically like, we're setting a standard for funny, and anybody who's down needs to get down to this level. That's the comics table. That's the influence of Patrice O'Neill and Opie and Anthony, as they set a standard, and they help people rise up through the ranks to meet that standard. Well, Red Band got pissed, and so he took my idea and he promoted my buddy David Deary. No disrespect or anything to David Deary. I love him. I'm glad he got the opportunity. But that was definitely a fuck you to me from Brian Red Band. Some subtle shade. Lewis is Kill Tony's at least now kind of on the page of operating and functioning like a cartel. At one point, I was trying to get Dante Nero on Joe Rogan's podcast because the way Joe talks about stuff is very similar to a men's rights activist. And I thought, well, Dante, with all his horseshit, he'll fit in there. And Dante, at one point, when I dug him out of the ground and helped him get his shit together, I was doing so much more stuff for his career than his own agent that he fired his agent. I was getting him more gigs because I would make the phone calls and I was looking for other shows and opportunities, and I was trying to push him out there so that, you know, he could be his own cartel or brand, because I was hoping I could be part of it, part of this legacy of Patrice and, you know, rugged hardcore comedy and shit. So as I was trying to get Dante on Joe Rogan, what I found out was, like, Rogan doesn't think of it as a cartel. Rogan is a fucking idiot. He thinks he's just out here in the world having a blast, doesn't think that he's launching careers, doesn't think that he's influencing the world, doesn't think that way at all. In fact, he would probably be disgusted by the idea of taking himself that seriously. But the people under him are very protective of him, and they don't want anybody getting into Rogan's stratosphere because they know that that'll fuck things up for them. Like Tony and Cheeto Santino and Ari, these guys don't want you to be on Rogan. They'll fucking actively block and try to knock you out, because if you outshine them, well, then they're not going to be on the road with Rogan, and they're not going to be coming on the show every once in a while. They're vultures. Vultures, I tell you. All right, we're going to go back to Lewis, but I'm going to take a quick break. All right, guys, part two, coming back. I apologize. My nose is all stuffed up, and it's hard to talk a lot and try and breathe at the same time without making all kinds of weird, gaspy noises. Lewis J. Gomez has launched a cartoon. We're going to talk about his cartoon, but first I'm going to tell you some of the history of my cartoon. I have two shows on the internet, Philip Wave and the With Apologies animated series. With Apologies, there's a show on the internet called Revenge of the Sis, and my buddy CEO noticed that this guy Mersh was taking a lot of Red Bar bits and then doing them as his own bits, and he was taking their content and he was kind of jacking it and going like, hey, nobody knows who Red Bar is, but if I bring this over to YouTube, like, I can, he's a buccaneer. That's what Logan Paul says. He's not a pirate, he's a buccaneer. Mersh is a buccaneer ass nigga. He's a lying, deceptive, slimy, wormy guy. So CEO pointed that out, and Mersh got so fucking pissed off, he flagged our channel With Apologies. He got his little group to flag us like 19 times in one night for everything. For thumbnails, for music, for inappropriate content. He threw the book at us, and the channel got completely suspended. Now, CEO lost his fucking mind and had a meltdown. I take this stuff as just par for the course. That's just part of what this is. We're going to get shut down. We're going to get deleted. Things are going to get removed. We're going to be deplatformed. All of this is going to happen. I've been watching Red Bar for like 8 years, as long as I've known the dude. And I watched all of this happen to him 6 years ago. He's been kicked off of Facebook and Twitter and YouTube. And I've seen, he's had to figure it out. And I've been watching and taking notes on how to figure it out based on the moves that he's making. So Mersh got With Apologies channel taken down, and it was just a backup burner channel. We've got literally dozens of channels, but CO was super pissed because that was his channel. That's where he got to put up clips of Donkey Lips and just people that he thought were like weird and fascinating that we should all laugh at and make fun of. So to retaliate, I created a new channel called Philip Wave. And I found this app where you can put a picture in there and then you can animate it slightly. You can make the mouth and eyes move. So I decided I would do some shows as them, mocking them. And then it kind of grew into making a sitcom about their life with a corny laugh track and just exposing them and putting in clips of them being racist and them saying that they hate their audience and them you know, flagging people, every crime they've committed. And for me, it was a, like iMovie had just come out on the iPhone, so it was a chance for me to learn editing. And I also just was like, I was playing around with every show. I tried to figure out one new thing that I could do. So I learned a lot about how to do green screen effects through doing that show. I learned a lot how to do limited animation through making that show. And it grew from just sort of randomly making fun of things they did to an actual sitcom where there are characters and there was character development. And it became very popular in the Fuck Mersh community. There's a community of 200 to 500 people that just fucking hate Mersh. They hate watch him. They drive him insane. Here's another just weird aside. Mersh has run afoul of Kiwi Farms through his scorning of porcelain and Natklo. And Kiwi Farms is a website that just trolls people. It's a website for trolls. And when before you can even sign up, they tell you, like, listen, people want to dox us, people want to kill us, government organizations investigate us. If you want to be part of this community, make up a new email, download a VPN, learn some basic internet security, because just being part of this can get your entire life fucked up. That's how gangster Kiwi Farms is. They are not to be fucked with. So Mersh has a page on there, and they doxed him, they swatted him, and as I'm reading through it, some commenter was like, hey, can we not dox? And then the response was, nigga, do you know where you are? This is Kiwi Farms. Doxing is standard procedure around here. And sure enough, they put all of it out there. Every record, every photo, every snippet, anything they can find. They're like bloodhounds. They're more thorough than fucking the FBI when it comes to making fun of someone. So it was mentioned that Red Bar just got into it with Joey Diaz, and Saiyans covered that. Saiyans is one of the early guys that we were trolling and fucking around with as part of our universe. And I was excited because I thought that Kyle, the host of it, was into the drama of it, into the spectacle of it. And I was like, oh boy, this is going to be great. So he covered Joey responding to Red Bar, and just, he smashed him. He called him a faggot. He smashed him. He did 8 Mile. He just said, he said, yeah, I do drugs. And then he called him a faggot. He smashed him. And then Red Bar responded with what I say is a master class in how to do this. This is how it should be done. That's it. That's like, that shit is, deserves a trophy. So Kyle went to watch Red Bar's response, and he's fast forwarding, he's skipping around, and it turns out Kyle's not into the spectacle. Kyle just hates Red Bar. I don't even think he hates him. He just sees it as an opportunity to pick up more views, because he doesn't care if you're watching because you love him or hate him. He just wants you watching. He just wants the views, stupid. And in Kyle's covering of Red Bar, I found out that, Mike's wife, Jules, her nudes had been leaked. Yeesh, that sucks. That fucking sucks. And it turns out they were from when she was 15. So Mike had said to the people that are spreading these nudes around, he's like, by the way, that's pictures of a 15-year-old girl. That's child porn that you're, you know, throwing around. Just FYI. And Kyle's threatening to do a smashing of Red Bar, exposing the nudes. But Red Bar and Jules are good enough that they're like, they don't care. They're past all this. They ain't nothing gonna shake them. Yeah, look at my dick. Look at it. Go crazy. Here, I'll show you my open pussy hole. Nothing bothers me. I love that. When I saw that, I was just getting out of work, and I came home, and my wife was still up, and I was like, hey, sweetie, I just wanted you to know I'm gonna leak your nudes on the internet. She was like, whoa, what? And I was like, yeah, man, they did it to Mike's wife. I was just thinking, like, out of solidarity, I should put your pussy out there. And she said no. So, sorry, Mike and Jules, I tried to have some solidarity. But my wife is a normal person. The nudes thing, it's like, I don't think it bothers the individual as much as it's probably, like, it's not that you mind that people have seen your body, it's that you don't want, like, your mom and dad knowing that people are looking at your naked body as that little bit of, like, fucking jerks you in your soul a little bit. But at the end of the day, if you're If you're looking at these nudes, if you're jerking off to these nudes, you're a fucking disgusting pig. You're the loser. I hate that the internet doesn't have any sense of fairness, and that's with the doxing. I don't do this doxing gay shit. Some people that float around my universe certainly have and certainly do. And when you're dealing with someone like Jim or Nam who's out trying to dox you, it's hard to not sink to that level. But I grew up on all these 90s cartoons where it's like, you never want to sink to the level of your enemy. You always want to be superior, morally superior at the very least. So I don't support that. I don't support doxing. I don't support nudes. I don't support going after family. You know, we have 1,000 pictures of Jim or Nam's wife and kids. We're not going over it. It's disgusting to me. Anyway, that was an aside. We'll see if Kyle comes up. I assume Mike will handle it. What the fuck were we talking about? Philip Wave. So I made Philip Wave as a way to make fun of and expose Mersch and Royce. And the way I did it is there's a program called like IBIS. I'm going to make a little bit of noise as I look and find the actual thing on my phone real quick. IBIS Paint. Now, IBIS Paint is a cheap, free, bootleg version of Photoshop. And, like, if you've ever seen a cartoon, they have, like, a clear page that comes down. Basically, it gives you 8 clear pages, and you can zoom in and pull out and bend and turn and do whatever you want. So it makes it really easy to draw. Like, if you want to have something in the background, you don't know how to draw, you can throw a picture in there and trace a building or a car or whatever the fuck you want to do. Which I guess is called swiping. I've been learning about the comic industry. Apparently, it's very common practice for swiping, where they either take 3D rendered backgrounds and then draw over them, or a lot of times, and this is kind of creepy, they take porn pictures and then draw the women. The superhero women are actually porn models in some cases. Except instead of the pussy holes sticking out, they got on some little tights underwears and such. So with this program, you know, you can move your page around and you have multiple layers. So like in the Halloween episode, there's a moment where, the couch jumps out of the floor. Mersch and Royce's couch became a character in the show for reasons. I don't even know if I want to explain that much of it. There was a whole storyline about how Mersch slept on Royce's couch, and the couch got so sick of Mersch that it ran away. And then in the Halloween special, it comes back to kill him. His eyeball also ran away and teams up with the couch and comes back to kill him. It's completely ridiculous. So the couch comes out, and there's a scene where, like, Mersch runs up this one set of stairs and then another. So, like, one layer is, you know, the foreground or the stairs, and then you see him run behind that. That's another layer. And then you see him turn around and run up another layer. That's another layer added. And I just stack up all these layers, and what I do is I screen record my phone, and then I, you know, select my asset. I don't know if this is too technical or whatever. And then I have it move in between the layers. So this app isn't designed to be animation, but it's, I'm using it my own way to make something that's very similar and reminiscent to the earliest episodes of South Park. And the shittiness of Philip Wave is part of what's funny and charming about it. It's that so little effort is put into it. Like, every episode is made in an hour or less. That's the fastest turnaround in animation. You know, South Park has a week. I make an episode in an hour. Through this shitty animation. And I've basically invented my own style of, like, jumping back and forth between people that are talking to create the element of being in a room, or the element of jumping from area to area. I rewatch episodes of South Park just to sort of get ideas for how to do, and I notice whenever their characters talk, they're always waving their arms up and down and blinking a lot. And I can't quite do that because I can move one thing at a time with this app. So I could have them wave one arm up and down, but it's been enough to just have their face talking and then jump to the next person talking, and that creates enough motion that you don't feel like you're just watching something that's completely still. That's the best way I can articulate that. You need some sort of motion and energy. You don't have to be Aaron Sorkin, where the characters are fucking walking and talking at all times, but you don't want it to feel so stilted that, like, you feel like the characters can't move, because then they don't feel like they're alive. So, I created Philip Wave to do all this, and then recently I've been taking South Park and just 100% ripping them off and making my own South Park characters clips from with apologies. Now, I originally had an idea to make a show, and sort of the premise, the first episode starts with looking at how shitty animated comedy is right now, because it is really shitty. Even South Park is kind of like losing its... Well, it's not losing its edge. It's just... It doesn't have that special something to it right now. Maybe this next season will come back. They fucked up, like, season 19, and since then, it's almost like that L is hanging over them, and they're kind of not doing... Maybe that's just my perception of the show as a viewer. Maybe they internally... You know, to them, they're killing it. And there's a million great things that they're doing within what's coming out now, but it just doesn't feel like it flows and connects the way it was flowing and connecting 3 or 4 years ago. There's a scene recently, speaking of, like, animation, so South Park, as shitty as the animation is, they've been stepping it up as they go along. In fact, some characters now have five fingers, and other characters have the mitten hand, where it's like a thumb and a mitten. And there was a scene I was watching the other day where Randy goes to talk to a guy who's growing his own weed, and Randy has five fingers, and the guy he's talking to has a mitten hand. And it's a weird thing where it's like they didn't update all the characters. They update them as they need to go. And Philip Wave, if you guys haven't watched it, you gotta watch it from the start to finish, because there is a continuity to it, and every episode builds on the episodes before it. So there's constantly callbacks to other episodes, callbacks to other gags, references to things that happened in previous episodes, and I tried to make it one long continuous story, which is a weird thing. Like, that was the death of South Park, was trying to make it one long story, but I, you know, in my own limited way, I haven't found it to be that hard to just pick up where I left off at the last episode. I like continuity. I hate shit that's just like, who knows what next week's gonna be? Gonna be completely random. I like storylines. I like sagas. within comic books and stuff, most manga and anime, I can't stomach it. I can't get past a couple of minutes of it, but there have been a few. Like, there was one, the Full Metal Alchemist. It's just breathtaking, the brevity of what they did within this story, the character development, the way all of the elements come together from the beginning to the end, and it's one long continuous thing, and then it's over. And I like that about anime, that it's like the same thing about British television. I would rather have, you know, 6 hours of a really good story and then it's done, than something that's trying to get into syndication and just run down forever, and it just becomes like The Simpsons, where it loses all of its spirit, it loses all of its teeth, all of its relevance, and it just becomes a parody of itself. So, Philip Whip, with apologies. I originally had a storyline in my head where I was looking at how shitty comedy was, and then I was going to have a high school setting where all of the different characters that we make fun of were students within that high school, and I was going to involve elements from their shows as well as just our own thing and make it like an episode of South Park, but it turns out that's way too much work. Even the way I'm doing the limited animation now, with just trying to have the mouth move, it still doesn't quite look right. It's still not quite smooth enough that, like, you can just you can't disappear into the illusion of watching something. It's too buckly, where, like, the mouth will be moving at the wrong time, and that takes you out of enjoying what you're watching, because the flaws are too evident. And that's something that I'll refine in time. I learn as I go. So I initially had this storyline involved where, like, the character of my dad is looking for something funny, because nothing's funny anymore, everything's political, and the characters of me and the other With Apologies castmates are going to high school, and all of the high schoolers are now podcasting, and they're all there was going to be a scene where they go to recess and like CEO wants to play football and we can't find enough people to play football because now everybody's podcasting. And I was going to have like a bunch of lunch tables set up and it was going to be like a timer would tick down and then it would bing and everybody would get up and move one seat to the right and they would do the circle jerk of doing everybody else's podcast. And then all they'd be talking about on the podcast is the process of doing podcasting. And rather than being funny, they'd be talking about the process of comedy. Very funny to me. Maybe it's too inside baseball. And that was a whole storyline that was going to play through where like my dad was going to catch me and the With Apologies guys having these crazy conversations on our phone, which would be clips from the show. And then he was going to start secretly recording us. So in episode 2, you see my dad's character standing at the door holding his microphone, and he was going to make bootleg tapes of that and start spreading it around to the adults in his office who are all like Joe Rogan fans. And that was the premise of the narrative tale, but I've decided to scrap that for now. I'm just going to take clips that I really enjoy and animate them out because there's not enough visual element to what my show is. Like with Red Bar, you're at least watching a guy do a thing. With me, it's pretty much audio only. Like you see the chat and you see whatever graphics Ross Dog puts up, but it's not as entertaining as watching a person. And even when our show does have people going live, it's just fucking shitty cameras of a person standing in their room. It doesn't feel like a show. It doesn't look professional enough. So I want to have some sort of animated element so that it's more palatable and easier to digest. And I think clipping things up with that animated element will go a long way toward spreading out the show and picking up new viewers and growing. And this comes from a few years ago, before I got into all of this editing. Lane, who's my agent, he was saying like, you know, you're putting out your podcast, but you're not... this shit needs to be on YouTube, and you need to be putting out your stand-up on Instagram, because all the comedians do this shitty thing where like they put out a minute of stand-up with like subtitles under them, and all of them are doing it. If all of you are doing it, then fucking what is the point? It stops being special. So I had said to him, like, here, man, I'll pay you. Every week I'll give you $20 if you take 1 minute from my stand-up and just add some sort of visual element to it. I don't care if it's pictures to what I'm referencing to, cartoons or whatever. And he was taking a lot of clips from Family Guy and stuff. But his life was a little chaotic. So it was like we got like 4 of them done. And then we never got around to doing anything else. Anyway, there's a longer episode of With Apologies coming. It's about 40 minutes long. And it's just going to be as there are moments on the show that I really like, I'm going to do my best to animate them. Now, Luis J. Gomez has dropped his own cartoon, his own little Philip Wave. I've been teasing Luis, and he has been responding in his own way. It's almost like when they don't want to say your name, like these guys bitch and moan about shadow banning, but if you're going to respond to someone and not say their name, that's low-key shadow banning. So, like, I was teasing Lewis in an episode of Philip Wave, because Revenge of the Sith went on the Real Ass podcast, so I came up with a storyline that Mersh and Lewis were dating. They were a couple. And I had them go on the show, and I was making fun of how Zach Amico, Lewis's sidekick, looks like the clown from Spawn, and then Lewis responded by commissioning someone to draw a comic book cover of him and Zach as Spawn and the clown. And now Lewis, who studies me and listens to my show, is making his own cartoon. And he's doing it in the style of, there was a Fox show called like ADHD. And then there was like a spinoff from that show called like Bazooka Joe or some weird shit. It was like about a rave guy. I fucking hate these cartoons that are just like spastic and they jump from moment to moment to moment to moment. Lewis is imitating that. And, he's trying to make his own cartoon, which will probably go on to actually get on TV. Like, it's shitty. It's awful. 2 minutes in, I felt like I'd been there for an hour, but it's enough that it could go on Adult Swim and it would fit in with what they're doing. They may ask him to take out the N-words. One thing I like about it, I like the way he transitions from scene to scene where he zooms into something and then that turns into the next scene or he zooms out of something. I do like the way he transitions from scene to scene. It's something I can't do with the way I'm animating things. But Lewis, little baby Lewis, has gone and started his own cartoon, just like Philip Wave. And if you go to the, I think it's 5 minutes and 27 seconds, 28 seconds, somewhere around there, one of the characters goes, "It's bullshit," which is my shitty catchphrase. I get a lot of people that want to give me advice on how I can sell out and make it. And they're like, "Can you just do this and this? Can you just play the game?" And I can't explain to them that, like Patrice would always talk about, there's no lone gunslinger. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm doing the lone gunslinger route. Ooh, my little guy has just woken up. Hey, Mikey Bite, come here. All right, we're going to wrap this up. But the bullshit thing was me making fun of the fact that if I wanted to be successful, I would have some cornball catchphrase that means nothing. And little baby Lewis, who studies me, put that in there. But Lewis has not been real ass enough to call into with apologies. We've invited him, we've tweeted him, we've sent him the phone number. So Lewis, I'm going to tell you now. You're clearly paying attention to me. And it'll do you a world of good to get beat up by me, because I know what I'm talking about. I am the thing that you're pretending to be. You should meet me and get to know what reality feels like. And we'll see if you call in on Sunday. Alright guys, my little guy has woken up. More ramblings to come next week. Deuces.
Of this, yes. You're not talking about that shit that y'all rigged, right?
That wasn't rigged. Why would it be rigged?
Oh my God, Lupe Fiasco, you talking to me about that shit that y'all rigged with all the best gamers in the world that they let you fucking win because of your name and your likeness?
Were you trying to
Atlantic Records me?
What is this? You know what? Your support for Craig Kalman is misplaced, and you will soon learn swiftly. And Steve, that nigga's no good. But anyway,
Which Steve?
You'll learn the hard way, Steve Stout.
Yep. No, I have a different set of beliefs.
Y'all gonna regarding, learn the hard way about young to Craig Kalman and what he does in the streets.
Lupe, I used to share the bitterness that you have toward the industry. Bitter. Yes, you are.
Well, how am I bitter?
Lupe, what do you mean? Lupe, come on, man. Let's have an honest conversation. You are bitter because you are arguably the greatest rapper to ever live.
Yep.
And I think that you entered some shit and art was mishandled. And you are not viewed coming out of that the way that you should be viewed by the masses. It's not something that's just specific to you. It's happened to me. It's happened to Royce. It's happened to Black Thought. It's happened to Hove at one point. Not being mistreated by the industry. But I'm saying all of the greatest rappers in the world have experienced this. And you haven't resolved.
I'm trying to get an understanding of what you mean. Experience what specifically?
This is already rarefied air because I'm only talking about niggas that are of a certain ability to rhyme. That's number one.
And the realms in which we walk. But when you
we went through it out of love and got chewed up. That's what I'm saying. Don't make it deep. We went through it. Not together, I went through it first. And then you went through it and we got chewed up and we took hits from it. Professionally, personally, reputation-wise, they dragged our names through the mud, nigga. We're kindred souls. We are eye to eye here.
Joe, you never had it as bad as me. I know no other rapper in the industry, period. You know, I know a bunch of people. I know no one in the industry apart from people who got like literally raped or from people who literally got fucked over, that had it as bad as Lupe Fiasco. In the time between the cool and the end of my record contract with Atlantic.
I wonder why you think that.
It's not a think, I mean the factual.
How do you conclude that?
I've had to have, there was a protest to get my third album out. A petition.
I remember
to get that album out.
Right? I remember
the last and final album, the fifth album, It took a hacker group, which was at the time fighting the Ku Klux Klan and the North Korean government, took time out to advocate on behalf of the release of our record. Nobody in rap has ever had that happen to them, period.
What, to have some powerful ass group come and fight for your rights?
Yeah, anonymous. Nobody.
I know. I was shooking them niggas.
Right. So, in terms of, like, of course, the contract foolery and the shenanigans and all that shit, everybody's deal is going to have some bullshit. And it all depends on how much you navigate and negotiate, how powerful your rebuttals and responses are. But in terms of just general, no nigga in the game can bring to the table in terms of getting, you know, having to fight the good fight and getting beat up about it as far as Lupe Fiasco, period.
I don't
The president doesn't like me.
I don't think your story comes anywhere near my story. You're a little misinformed, Lupe Fiasco. You went right to the tough years for you, which I remember. I remember the boycott. I remember you pump faking with the album. I remember you responding to everything Atlantic said about the release of your album. I remember Anonymous. You skipped over the hits. You skipped over classic albums. You skipped over a run that you had. So you can't acknowledge one side without acknowledging the other.
There's great notice my only beef at Atlantic Records and has always only been with three people.
Craig Allen,
Mike Caron, and Mike Kaiser.
Okay.
Right, the rest of the building, beautiful. Julie Greenwald is an amazing executive and a wonderful record executive. And in some cases, a wonderful person at that. Like, very supportive. Marsha is amazing. The whole staff, from promotions to radio to regionals. Like, Atlantic Records.
How do you have a beef with Kais?
Huh?
How do you have a beef with Kaiser?
Because when I had pneumonia, a lot of what people are dying from right now with this COVID-19 situation. So I had pneumonia at the end of the Cool tour. And I was instructed by my doctors, like, I could have died. And the doctors told me, you can't fly, right? And, you know, it wasn't me punt faking. It's like, I couldn't, the doctor said, if you get on a plane, you might die. So Mike Kaiser was the dude who had the link at BET. So, everybody has their position at a label for a various reason. They might have a link to MTV. They might be the man at this, the man at that. So Mike was the man at BET. So him and, what's the bald head dude name at BET?
The bald head dude at BET.
What's his name? The head of BET. Not
definitely. You talking about Steven?
Steven. So they were doing fucking spring bling. Bullshit ass spring bling. I think something was popping. I think Superstar was popping. And they wanted me to go to spring bling down in, I think, Panama City or Daytona Beach, whatever the fuck it was, to do Superstar. Just that song and leave for their Project Runways, whatever the fuck it was. And I was like, yo, my doctor told me not to fly, man. You know, like, no disrespect. You know, I love BET. I fuck with it. And I guess Kaiser and fucking Steven had their little powwow. This nigga Kaiser called me, tell me, if you don't get on a plane and fly down here to Spring Bling, BET's not gonna play anymore your music or your videos.
Yeah.
Right? So that's one.
But wait. Yeah.
Yeah.
See, nigga, that's my point about you, man.
So Pete Gang. So it's like, you want me to risk my life to fly down to Daytona Beach to do one song, and that's it. And if I don't do it, you're not going to support or play any of my music?
I quickly learned that that's how this works.
Yeah, so I don't fuck with Mike Kaiser. That and for other reasons. I don't fuck with Craig for deeper, darker, dirtier fucking reasons. And the same thing with Mike Caron. But that's just three specific people.
I've never had the pleasure of meeting Mike Caron.
Hey. Anyway. So anyway, but I'm
passionate. I don't feel like a nigga with the hits that you have is allowed to really do that.
Do what you mean?
Because on the radio side's perspective, they've already spent X amount of dollars getting the song where it needs to be. This is the old days, so they probably did the same on the video. They serviced it, timing, all of this bullshit. You know the routine. So no, they don't care about us. And BET definitely was gonna tell them, nah, we're not doing that if you don't get down here. That's how the business works. I hate the business of it.
Yeah.
Because that's how it works. Because they don't really give a fuck about the artists or our actual well-being. Like, but you too dope to still even give them that part of your soul. That's how I feel. That was so long ago. Nigga, we on Street Fighter, we on Ninja Swords, Karate, we on so much other holistic shit. Your mind is like so much greater than even having the time to retroactively look at some shit, man.
I'm also petty, and I also know that the damage that niggas did is legacy damage. You know, I know niggas tried to fuck my life up physically, etc., right, in other ways. So, and I still had niggas spreading rumors about me to this day, about promoters who didn't want to book me for shows. Mm-hmm. Over what niggas was doing, you know. So remember my first album leaked. Who did that? We still don't fucking know. Right? So I mean, it's shit that's like, yeah, it's, and to be honest, it's certain shit that I leave alone, you know. I just keep it moving. But I also need to, when I see shit that's like fucked up, and I know that the artists are still gonna have to be artists and they're still working within a certain system that's fucked up, it's good to people to give people that other side of the story and that heads up. Like, that nigga that you fucking with is a snake. Like, I know you're gonna get money and you're gonna win and you're gonna get on the radio and you're gonna get famous and you're gonna buy a house and you're gonna da 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 da. But remember, that nigga that you fucking with is a snake, right? And you might be getting show money, but then how does that nigga have more publishing on your songs than you do?
Oh, you talking now?
Yeah, how is the CEO of the company gonna have more publishing on your song than you do? So how you supposed to get paid in a legacy play? Because eventually the shows are gonna slow up.
Well, right? and that's kind of why we need your voice as a beacon of light to be shined upon some of the newer acts, Lupe.
Yeah, but you gotta let me shit on these niggas sometimes. You can't just call me bitter because I'm shitting on the niggas who fucking the game up. Steve Stout said the game needs to change, right? I watched a little piece. He's like, this need to switch. Nigga, I was there when the niggas left Spotify in the building, right? I was one of the first niggas with Spotify on my computer,
mm-hmm.
right? And I was, mm-hmm. I seen the shit and niggas talking about music needs to become a utility. Like you pay a water bill, you pay a music bill, et cetera, and drop mm-hmm. the price of a song from 99 cent to less than fucking a fraction of a penny.
Mm-hmm. Right? I was there for the 360 birth.
I was there with the three niggas thought my 360 shit. They gave me my 360 deal when I was in recovery for pneumonia. Craig Kalman I'm laying in a fucking hotel room with a bottle of Pimentazine and some Tylenol 3, and this nigga sitting on the side of the bed with a fucking, look like a menu from Denny's with all the bullet points on it with my picture on that shit. So I mean, at this editor, if you really truly want to change the business, like you would, like the conversation you and Steve had, which was a great conversation, other than that point, you see I ain't say shit else. Then you gotta point out the people that ain't shit, that's hiding behind the success of other people. Right? That's really fucking the game up. They're really the reason that the game is fucked up. Lior is a big part of the game being fucked up. And how niggas move and how niggas getting fucked over and you know, like just what they call it? Like they don't, like you said, they don't really give a fuck about the well-being of the artist. Well, when are they? And what's going to make them do that?
Well, right. Lupe, we're kind of witnessing the same thing between us as a population and the U.S. government.
And what it's way? Kind of,
they don't give a fuck about us as a people.
Now you're standing in a territory where it's like, again, that's not the case for the USC. When I say Atlantic Records, I say Craig Kalman, Mike Caron, Mike Kaiser. I don't say the whole fucking building. When it's time to like really break it down and get into the nitty gritty of the conversation, who did what, as well as Leo Cohen. But I'm not throwing the whole fucking building under the bus. My picture's still up there on the wall.
I know.
You know, for good reason. You bring 14 Grammy nominations and a Grammy into the building, and you sell 3, 4, 5 million records. You know.
See, and that's why niggas like me, Lupe, feel like you can't really feel like you feel. And I've said this to all the niggas that have had a much better career professionally than I have. Like, y'all niggas was rocking. At some point, you was playing the game the right way with cooperation from your label.
Bro, who put Kick Push on the radio?
On the radio, that was you.
We did that.
Yeah, I know.
Who called WGCI?
Wait, stop right there. Who continued to finance Kick Push?
Stop. You getting into something. Who put Kick Push on the radio?
You did.
We did. First and 15 Productions. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Who called WGCI, which was giving Kick Push about 200 spins a week, and told them to stop playing the record?
I don't know.
Craig Kalman.
Okay.
Personally called. How do we know that?
That's my next question. Let's do it.
Because the PD at the radio station was on our friends.
Do we know why?
So in the meeting that Craig had about that, once it got out, right? They said, well, why? He got confronted with the shit. Like, yo, you know, the PD of GCI reached out to us and told us that he got a call from you that said to slow down or stop playing the song. So the niggas in the nigga, all the A&R staff was there. Niggas couldn't believe it. Like, why the fuck would you do that? Asking Craig, why would you do that? Right? And he said so he could give the label more time to catch up.
I was gonna guess that.
That's crazy.
Or smart.
No, that's not smart. That's crazy. Because every A&R in the room was like, why the fuck would you do that? Why would you slow down a record? Why would you actively slow down a record as opposed to meeting the record where it is? It's not hurting anybody. You know why he did it?
Yes.
You know why he really did it?
Oh, no.
Because he didn't have nothing to do with Kick Push.
Okay, well, that exists in the corporate world too, though.
From an equity position. He didn't have any publishing. He didn't have any royalty rights. He didn't bring the producer. He didn't have anything to write it. He had nothing to do with it. You know what they did?
What?
They flew down to the Philippines to find the woman who we sampled the record from and bought the entire record from her. So they actually own the song that Kick Push is sampled from. That's what they did. You like that? I could do that with Superstar.
But Lupe, wait. Slow down, man. I didn't believe it.
But I could do that same conversation with Superstar. I could do that same conversation with Show Goes On. I can do that conversation with Battle Scars. Like, the conversation around Battle Scars is so fucked up.
But wait. I'm about to sound like a real Republican right now.
Do it. Do what you gotta do.
All right. Oh, man. All right. But Lupe, Isn't that smart?
It's genius. Joe,
yo,
it's,
that is some,
listen.
That is some genius on some, shit.
Listen, on some gangster shit, they don't, Atlantic doesn't double dip, they triple dip. It's fucking genius.
That's hard, Lupe.
It's cold blooded.
Yeah, that's hard.
Don't get me wrong. Trust me, Joe, I'm from the streets. I'm a street nigga for real. The shit's genius.
Yeah, that's some ill shit.
Grow it, sell it, and own the pawn shop that niggas are stealing the TVs and selling the shit back to you so you can sell, nigga.
That's a cold game. That's a cold game. Hey, but wait. See, but listen now, and this is why I'm against you, because what I've learned is to have a good business partner and an effective business partner, they need to be as invested as you in some shit.
Joe, how big was my...
Let me talk. I let you talk, Lupe. Hold up. Let me talk. I let you talk.
You talk a lot, Joe.
Huh?
I said you talk a lot.
Listen, they need to be as invested as you. So yes, they went and bought the sample and now they own the record and you're on the label. But after that, they damn sure made sure that record went.